T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
WAXYAM South Miami and WSFS-FM HD2 Miramar, the only sports station in Miami with local and live coverage on weekends.
Mixed martial arts and boxing fans, it's time for Fighter's Fury, inside the heart of a champion, with your hosts, Brendan Tobin, Seema, and Tommy Guns. It's time for Fighter's Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
And good Sunday morning, everybody. Welcome on in. Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Tobin here with you. Seema's out this week. What a hell of a night it was last night. UFC 241. You know, sometimes they line up those cards, and it's an absolute monster. Like, you're just like, on paper, this is going to be fantastic. But I would say rare are the times where it actually does live up to the hype. And that's what last night was. Last night was absolutely fantastic. Heavyweight championship was unbelievable. The co-main event with the return of Nate Diaz and the performance that he put forth, and just the never say die by Anthony Pettis, even with a broken ankle, we find out afterwards. And my God, Yoel Romero versus Paulo Costa was just unbelievable as well. It really was just a great trilogy on the top of that card. Fantastic. And really, really delivered. So we'll get into a lot of that today. Got a fun show planned for you guys. Daniel Kay is joining us in studio. He is the president and CEO of XFN, Extreme Fighting Nation, and they are a local promotion. They do a lot of great work down here, putting on mixed martial arts event, and he's kind enough to join us. Daniel, thanks for making time for us today, man. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no, man. It's my pleasure. I love listening to your show, love tuning in, so it's exciting to be here.
It's good to have you, man. So before we get into what you guys got coming up next month, another fantastic card that you guys put on. Let's talk a little bit of what went down last night in Anaheim. First of all, I mean, just a really, really great card, really, really entertaining. But I'll start off with Yoel Romero versus Paulo Costa. It was one of the best fights I've seen. I don't want to go and putting it as like one of the best fights of all time, but I came out of that fight thinking that, man, we've been wanting it for so long. It's been scheduled and scratched and scheduled and scratched, but it was worth the wait. I mean, those guys just put on such a hell of a performance, really entertaining, some crazy strikes from every single angle. I don't know how they had the gas tank to even get through 3 rounds. It felt like it was gonna wear down at any moment, and just an unbelievable showing.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you've got two big guys like that that can push the pace from bell to bell, and you know, nonstop action, lots of power. Of course, it was going to be an exciting fight. A lot of people expected there to be a finish early on, but you know what? This was one of those fights where I really didn't mind watching 15 minutes of action. They just kept it coming.
It really was, man. It was one of those things where, like, it felt like the ending could have come at a time. It felt like it could have happened quick. Like, you know, Costa dropped Yoel quick. Then Yoel got him tripped up early on. You really never knew when it was going to happen. Like, the fact that they got through 15 minutes is pretty wild in its own self. A lot of people looking at this, there was a lot of booing afterwards with the decision, which I found odd because it's okay to think Yoel won. I thought Yoel edged it out. But I thought that it wasn't warranted of anybody getting robbed. It was that close. I did think it was a very close fight. I thought Costa put in an unbelievable performance. And so to see that booed afterwards, not that it soured what was put forth in that cage, but man, it really was like, I don't know how as a fan you could feel like there was any robbery afterwards because it was so damn entertaining.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there, man. It was a great fight. Everybody should have just been excited, you know, with how great the fight was. You get so many fights these days where fighters are trying to protect themselves and not really try to win. Both guys were trying to win the entire time. And like you said, at one point, Romero got the knockdown. On the other point, Costa got the knockdown. And it was back and forth the entire 15 minutes. So, you know, as a fan, I was excited the whole time. I was surprised to hear some boos. It really could have gone either way. It was a close decision. But you know what? I really thought that the fans won. The fans won that fight. It was a great fight.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, like, you hope sometimes when you put that fight together, everybody gets excited for it, and you're just like, man, what do those guys get? Two guys who are absolute finishers. They put forth crazy strikes, crazy pace. What is that going to look like in the cage? And sometimes it comes out and it's just like they're almost too worried about what the other guy can do, and it's a lot of sizing each other. That was not the case with this fight. It was bananas. They really, I mean, the show that they put on was absolutely crazy. I thought this was a big fight for Costa in this regard, man. He's a young guy, and you never know. Like, he's a guy who's been dusting a lot of guys in one round, and so what's it going to be like when there is that pushback? What is it going to be like when he is pushed in a little bit further into those deeper waters? And when you see what he was able to do when he was game, now, he definitely did start wearing down as the fight went on. It kind of felt like as round two was going forth, and then definitely into round three, I thought was a clear Yoel round. You did see him wear down, but he didn't wither. Like, this wasn't a case of a guy who went away. And if he is going to be in title contention, if he is going to take on the winner of Israel Adesanya versus Robert Whittaker, you could see, like, okay, this guy's game for it. There is that next level, and there is growth there for somebody who's only 28 years old.
Yeah, Romero was definitely his biggest test to date, and it was classic. You know, it's your old school guy versus your new school up and comer, and it was a real test for him. But I mean, like you said, he proved that he can, you know, withstand the top talent that's out there. He can really push the pace. Like, he did slow down in the third round, but come on, he was fighting Yoel Romero. The guy's a beast. The guy's got so much power. And when you're big and you got those big of muscles, yeah, man, they need so much oxygen just to keep going. That come on, you can't really be surprised the guy got tired. But
I felt like doing crunches like in the middle of the fight. Like, it was one of those. It was like it body shames you immediately when they both walk into the cage. You're just like, oh, all right.
Yeah,
I'm gonna put the popcorn down.
Yeah, tell me about it. As I bite into my coconut shrimp and loaded fries at the Ale House.
It's just like, Jesus. What are those specimens that are walking into the cage? But it was really great. I know a lot of people down here are pissed about Yoel feeling like he got hosed because, you know, local guy from down here. You want to feel like he is getting the he's not getting the short end. And Yoel has been on the short end of a lot of decisions. And so the fact that it happens again, I get that frustration totally. Like I said, I thought that he won the fight. I thought that if I could put it down like this, this is where I thought the big miss for him was. I thought that I thought on television it came across the defense and the rolling with the punches and the cage dope kind of style that he was going forth. I thought that came across pretty great. It is, I would say, tougher probably in a live environment to judge that because it depends on what side of the cage that he's on, what the crowd is reacting to. So I think probably letting Paolo dictate that pace and dictate what he was putting forth coming forward on the cage, that's probably what ended up costing. But if you were going to say, like, who ended up coming out of that cage and took the bigger beating, I felt like Paolo took the brunt of the punishment out of that fight. But I really don't want to dwell on it too much because it was just so damn entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, the judge's perspective is really different than the spectator's perspective. You know, they're looking at who's controlling the fight. They're not sitting there with the scorecard and counting how many punches are going. And what we're seeing, the stats that the UFC and ESPN are putting out with how many significant strikes, they're not seeing that. That's not how they're making their judgment. So all they see is the fight that's directly in front of them.
Right.
So when they see Costa pushing Romero up against the fence and Romero kind of just leaning back there and, you know, some fancy head movement to try to avoid some punches, it's still Costa with octagon control. And I feel like that plays a huge part in it. You know, wrestling is the dictating factor in these fights because if you can take the guy down, you're controlling the fight. If the guy's trying to take you down and you can keep it standing, you're controlling the fight. So that's something to keep in mind, too. Romero was probably comfortable where he was up against the fence, but that's probably what cost him the fight was the fact that he wasn't the one really pushing the action, and it looked like Costa was.
Definitely. Now, let's get to the co-main event. It was Nate Diaz versus Anthony Pettis.
Wow, what a fight.
What a fight. What a performance by Nate Diaz 3 years out of the octagon. I think it came across clear that the absence of Nate Diaz made the heart grow fonder because that crowd went bananas for him. They really – I mean, like, I know he's a California guy, but, I mean, he came across as such a superstar and people being happy that he was back in the octagon after such a long layoff. And to do that with 3 years off to a guy like Anthony Pettis, my God, it was so impressive to see that this is where the guy picks up after that kind of an absence. And just a lot of high-level stuff. Like, I thought once he felt – you know, once he got into his comfort zone, it felt like it was a little bit shaky early on in that first round. But once he really got his bearings, I mean, we saw some really insane stuff, man. Insane strikes, insane pace. The kind of exchanges these guys were having on the ground, too, was super impressive. It felt like once you thought one fight was going, the fight was going one way, or Nate was going to finish it off, I mean, the durability of Anthony Pettis to come through on some of those was very, very impressive. But it was, I would say, of the top three fights, it was the most clear cut. Nate did win that fight. Thought he was going to end up finishing with when he started piling up those knees in the third round, but he didn't. I mean, that again speaks to just what Anthony Pettis' heart is. I mean, this guy's a former champion, but this I think Nate Diaz is back on the map and looks like he's here to stay.
You know, based on his personality and the fact that he was off for 3 years and all the pre-fight antics that he puts on, you know, I really expected him to come out there and just have fun. You really think that Nate's just the type of fighter that's in it for the attention and, of course, the payday, you know? But
yeah.
I didn't really, going into this fight, I didn't really think that he had title contention in mind or anything like that. But when the fight started, I mean, you saw a completely different fighter in Nate Diaz. He took that fight really seriously.
Yeah.
His game plan was you know, specific for this matchup and to win this fight. I really expected to see more of the Stockton slap. I expected to see him flip off the crowd. I expected him to put on, you know, that show that he usually does. But he took this fight really seriously, and I think that goes to say a lot about his opponent. You know, like you said, he's a former champion. These are two former lightweights that are now fighting at 170.
Yeah.
Can I just point out how much bigger Diaz looked than Pettis in that fight?
He did.
It became really clear early on that Pettis wasn't going to have the power to put him away. At least not with punches. And Pettis said earlier in fight week, where is he going to beat me? Where is he going to beat me? He's not going to beat me on the feet. He's not going to beat me on the ground. And that gave me a lot of confidence in thinking that Pettis was going to take that fight. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, you're right. But, man, Diaz really showed everybody that he could win it everywhere.
He really did. And I think that, look, Pettis already solved one really tough riddle when he stopped Wonder Boy. Like, nobody stops Wonder Boy. So I can get where he gets that confidence from. You're going in there against Nate Diaz. It's like, who stops Nate Diaz? It doesn't happen. He's like a zombie in there. But I thought it was a case of not just durability. I thought the skill set was so impressive by Nate. Like, he looked like he really, like, you saw whatever training that he was doing in this time off seemed like it really paid off. Like, there was, you know, maybe some elements where you thought maybe early on, like, he was starting to find needed a, like, a second wind, or he was just gathering himself. Both of them had injuries in the midst of that fight. Like, you saw that what was happening with Pettis' leg didn't feel right. At one point, Nate Diaz's eye got messed up. So they were both going through some adversity there as well. Yeah, it was a crazy, crazy exchange between them both. When we come back, we'll get into a little bit of XFN, what they got coming up. It's a really, really exciting time for you guys. So we'll get into some of that. Also, big call out afterwards. I'm sure everybody down here in Miami is excited about, after Nate Diaz got himself a win, spoke to Joe Rogan. He's got himself an opponent in mind, and I think everybody down here is going to like it. We're back after this.
It's Fighters Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Fighters Fury here on 790, The Ticket. We got Daniel Kaye, president and CEO of XFN, in studio with us, and just walking in is bantamweight champion, going for two belts coming up. Brian Kuss is going to be fighting in September, so very excited to have you in studio as well, my friend. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're very excited about this. So we're gonna get to you guys' business in just a second. I wanted to get to this real quick, and that was the Nate Diaz call out after yesterday's performance. He ends up beating Anthony Pettis. This was him with Joe Rogan 3 years after is a long layoff. And we're wondering, like, this is what I thought, boys. When it came to him, I thought this was finally going to be like, all right, he's going to mother bleep Conor McGregor, and that's going to be him. But I saw this interview with him this week with Brett Okamoto, and he had such an interesting philosophy where he's just like, I just want to fight dudes who do cool bleep. That's it. It's no belts. It's none of that nonsense. He's like, yeah, I just want to fight guys who are cool. I'm like, all right. And so in his mind, he had somebody that he wants to match up with, and here's what he had to say afterwards.
After this great fight and having this great victory, do you think we'll be seeing you fighting regularly now?
The reason I was off is because everybody sucked. There was nobody to fight. But with this belt, I want to defend it against Jorge Masvidal. Had a good last fight. all respect to the man, but there ain't no gangsters in this game anymore. There ain't nobody who done it right but me and him. So I know my man's a gangster, but he ain't no West Coast gangster. You know what I'm saying?
Sign me up. Sign me up for that one. That is, I can't wait for that. I think it makes all the sense in the world. It's kind of like if George isn't going to get the title fight right now and, you know, he needs one more win, those guys make perfect sense for one another. And you're talking about two of the big stars right now in the sport. You got the 305 against 209. Makes all the sense in the world. I love it. What do you guys make of it?
He's a gangster, but he's no West Coast gangster. That is probably my new favorite line that ever came out of the UFC. I love that. Respect between two fighters, and I mean, he's right. Those are both probably the biggest gangsters in the UFC. I mean, Ryan, you're a gangster yourself, you know? So, I mean, these guys are going to throw down. They're going to put on a good fight. They know how to talk. They know how to fight, and they make it dirty. It's going to be entertaining for the fans. I'm all about it.
Yeah. I love that fight right there, West Coast versus East Coast. But I ain't going to lie, I love Nate Diaz, but George, I think, is going to take that one.
Yeah, and it's the way he's riding high right now, man, it's been unbelievable seeing the star rise of George Masvidal. You know, this is a guy who's been doing it for so long. He's done it in a bunch of promotions, but he's been in the UFC forever. I don't know what the secret sauce has been for him this year that everybody is now all of a sudden glamoring on and wanting to see him fight. You never quite know what it is and what's going to make the fans click. But whatever it is, it has. And that factor for him is now. And so to get a fight like this, Masvidal versus Nate Diaz, it just feels right. It feels, the timing feels right. Two guys who I don't even feel like need a championship. It feels like it could headline a pay-per-view on its own. And those are rare. You know, it feels like a lot of the time they're trying to like force guys in, or they'll just throw an interim championship on the line because they need a headliner for a pay-per-view. This doesn't need it. So very, very exciting. We'll get into the heavyweight championship a little bit later, but let's get to you guys, all right? So XFN, Daniel, give a little explanation to our audience of your promotion, what you're about, and what you got coming up.
Well, we're an MMA brand. You know, we're an MMA promotion, a league, so to say, like the UFC, right? But we're kind of the feeder system for the bigger leagues. We start guys out from their amateur debut, work them up until their pro debut, and then we even help them get in their first few pro fights until one of the bigger leagues pick them up. You know, that's the real idea. We farm talent, and South Florida has probably some of the most talented fighters around. There's a reason why people travel from all over the world to come and train down here and compete down here. You know, this is where all the toughest fights are. So, you know, we've been doing this since 2013, and we're all about putting on a real show, you know, providing real fights for the fans.
And so what is the next one you got coming up? What is coming up this September?
So XFN 25 is presented by HateJail.com, law offices of Matthew Glassman. It's on September 14th. At DS Sportsplex in Deerfield Beach, Florida. And that's a stacked card. I mean, one of the bigger cards that we've ever put together. First fight's going to start at 5 o'clock. We got 20 fights lined up. And we have a 7-fight main card with seven title fights.
Damn.
Yeah, we have, we're featuring one kickboxing title. We primarily do MMA, but, you know, we've been starting to do some kickboxing matches as well. But seven title fights in MMA. We're doing the welterweight title fight. We're doing a bantamweight title fight for an interim championship because, of course, we got the bantamweight champion right here, Ryan Coos, who's moving up to 145. Speaking of which, he's moving up to 145 because he's actually getting ready to represent the USA national team in a world tournament in Bahrain, November of this year.
That's wild. Yeah,
which is huge.
Daniel was telling me about this, Ryan. So Ryan Coos joins us. He's the Third Street Savage on Instagram. If you guys want to go follow him, check him out there. Tell us a little bit. So you're going for another belt, which is awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What got you into this game, and basically like this upcoming year, what do you got going on?
Well, I'm Ryan Coos for the y'all that don't know about me. I basically been fighting my whole life in the street, wrestling since I was like 6 years old. And eventually I just met somebody that put me into a gym and just got me in a fight. And after that day I was hooked.
Who was the person? Do you remember what the
Rayon Anwar, the other 145 pound champ.
And what was tell me the scenario. Like, what was it? Were you saying I'm getting into too many fights in the street? I need an outlet for this, or did he think you were damn talented and this will work for you? What got you there?
Well, me and him both used to fight people in the street, and we're both like basically just hooligans. And he found out about Wagner Rocha, and he told me, "Yo, come through. We train out there. We fight people every day." I'm like, "All right, let me try it out." Went through there. Then now I'm training right now with Asim Zaidi at the Goat Shed, and we're just racking up belts. I have right now my third belt. About to go get my first 145-pound belt, and I just made the U.S. World Team for amateur MMA.
That's awesome, man. So what is this tournament that you have coming up? Like, representing the U.S. for this, what is this coming up for you, and what does this mean for your career?
Well, I'm going to put on for the USA, and I know everybody's going to be watching when I come home with that gold, big old gold strap or gold medal, whatever it takes. I'm going to be fighting people from all around the world, Ireland, Bahrain, who knows where, Kazakhstan.
Have you done? Has fighting taken you traveling before? Like, where's the crazy? Or is this going to be the biggest branch out you've gotten to do?
I fought in, well, my first two fights were in Iowa when I was wrestling in college.
Okay,
but those, like, I wasn't training or nothing. Well, training MMA, just wrestling, and then I've traveled once to Mississippi. But other than that,
so this is going to be a new experience. Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
It's like a 22-hour flight.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm ready for that.
Man, that's pretty wild. So, like, how many people do you have to take out in this tournament to win it?
It's a 32-man bracket, right? So it's 5 days of fighting.
Damn.
Making weight every day, fighting the top competition.
That's pretty wild, because that seems very old school. Like, are you, as a wrestler, is that kind of harking back to your days of, like, having to get through a meet and making the way, and who knows you're taking on that day? Is that where you're gonna kind of harness to get back there, as far as, like, instead of a full fight camp, just prepping for a fight?
Yeah, definitely. That's where I think I should have my advantage. I've been going to tournaments wrestling 3-4 days in a row. Do a meet on Thursday, tournament on Friday, tournament on Saturday, making weight every day, coming home with all golds, same state tournaments and all that. I took fourth in the state of Florida, by the way, wrestling.
Really?
Yeah, so I got a little experience under my belt.
So if you were to explain people Ryan Cuse in the cage, what would how would you describe yourself? And when you're in that cage, what are some of your favorite things? Like, if you had a game plan go to a T, you know, forgetting who your opponent is, but, like, just the way you like going and executing a fight and putting forth on your opponent, how does that go down?
Well, they don't call me the Third Sheet Savage for no reason. I like to make it dirty. I like to fight people where they don't want to go. You want to go to the ground, bet? We're going to bang up top. You want to bang up top? Let's go to the floor. Let me show you what's up. So I like to, you know, get it dirty. Try to get it a little bloody if I could do it. But other than that, I like to make them uncomfortable. You know, just get into my zen mode and let my body do what it do.
Daniel, what do you see when you see Ryan fight, as far as a promoter's concern and what he brings to the cage?
You know, when he came to XFN before his first fight, he told me, he said, I'm going to be the champion. You're going to see. And I get people telling me that all the time. So I'm like, okay, you know, we'll see. Let's see what you got. But, man, he lives up to his name. Dude's a savage. He really does. He goes out there. He puts on a show. He's got a huge crowd that comes out and supports him, and they go nuts. The energy is electric when he's fighting, and it's a real fight. You know, it's not patty cake. It's not. It's a skillful fight, but the guy does damage. You know, and that's entertaining. At the end of the day, you want to see brutality, almost, you know, skillful brutality, and that's kind of what he brings to the table. So he's been really cleaning up shop at 135, making it look pretty easy, knocking out his opponents, taking them down, beating them up. So I have a lot of confidence in him moving up to 145, and honestly, I think that he's going to be able to bring home gold for USA at 145.
Ron, what is it about fighters from down here and some of the guys who are just able to click with the crowd? Like, you know, I'll go to boxing matches every now and then, and you'll just notice sometimes that the guys that are from down here, they have a special connection with their community. They have a special connection with the people down here. You know, like a boxer, Harold Calderon, comes to mind. Like, I remember going to this first fight, one of his first fights at the Hard Rock, and just thinking like, man, like everybody's here to see this guy. So Daniel was telling me beforehand, just like you seem to have that with getting people out to come watch you and care about watching you fight. What do you think that is?
I think fighting is part of South Florida's culture, and like, I don't know, people just love to watch a good fight. Like, I remember in school, if I tell somebody, yo, we're fighting at the park, me and my regional slide through, there's going to be a whole big crowd. Like, everybody just loves to watch fights. I don't know if it's just South Florida. And also, it's also the fighter. If that fighter got a certain demeanor, a certain type of swag, people are going to watch him. People are going to feel like he could come to the top. Like, the other day, I'm just eating sushi. Someone comes up to me. Hey, yo, can I get a pic before you're famous? I'm like, yo, I've known you my whole life. Like, I got you. Let's get one.
That's cool.
But yeah, I love like getting little things like that and like bringing a crowd out. You know, it's super fun. Makes you feel like you're a star.
Yeah,
like you're in the UFC.
It is. It's one of those things where you're just like, man, I can't. It's you just never know. It's one of those things where. Get into the Masvidal thing of what's going to click, but some guys just seem like they got it. Like, people just want to see them fight. They care about it. They want to be part of the journey. They root for you. You have that support system. I guess for you, like, what do you think are some of the biggest things that you have as a fighter? What are the things that you look for as support? Is it family? Is it friends? Is it mentors? What are some of the things that you lean on? Because as much of an individual sport as it is, I feel like a lot of fighters do need that kind of things, those types of things to lean on.
Well, my whole life, I've never been the model student. So I think that one thing that drives me was that every time I win a fight, my mom will tell me she's proud of me.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, I don't hear that often. No offense, Bob, but sorry for being a bad kid. But yeah, I don't hear that often. But every time I win, I'm, oh my God, I'm proud of you. Bet. I'm going to win again. Boom. Oh, I'm proud. Then my dad, proud of me. My whole family loves me. Every time I go to a family party, everybody's, when's the next fight? So like, it motivates me.
But did she want you to do this? When you first said, I want to do this, I want to make this a career, was she part of it, or she thought it was nonsense?
She thought it was nonsense.
Really?
But I turned them into believers real quick. Well, not real quick. Over the past 3-4 years, like, they started believing and seeing the vision that I've been seeing ever since I started.
What is the vision you see? Like, if we were to talk to you, let's say, if I talk to you in 6 months and then I talk to you in a year, what do you think that you want that? What do you want that to look like over the next 6 to 12 months? Where do you see yourself?
I could see myself in Bellator within the next maximum 18 months. I could see myself in Bellator doing damage, big damage.
Yeah, they've been doing a lot of rises for people too. It's been interesting seeing that, where it's been like, they're trying to get guys very early on and hone them up. And that's kind of what you've been doing too, Daniel. Like, is it interesting when you see, like, you're at the beginning of a lot of these rises and knowing who got it? And how do you know who has it or has something that you want to bring to your promotion?
Well, first of all, the ultimate goal for me is to get these guys to the next level. Nothing is more satisfying for me than seeing these guys fulfilling their dream, fighting on national TV. You know, he's talking about Bellator, and I think he's specifically saying Bellator because we've had one of our most successful fighters was Tywon Claxton. He came through the XFN League. He won our featherweight championship and then entered a 16-man tournament that we hosted, ran through everybody, and then made his pro debut with Bellator. He's now 5-0 or 6-0 with Bellator. He had that flying knee knockout heard around the world. I'm sure you saw that highlight video.
Sure.
And now he's entered that 16-man Grand Prix that Bellator is hosting. He's doing big things. So, but I mean, I'm looking for guys who take this seriously. Guys or girls. I'm looking for fighters who take this seriously. People who want to make it far, because I can help you get there. We provide the platform for you, for these fighters. We provide the exposure for these fighters. All you need to do is bring it. You know, work hard, get in the gym, and show up and put on a good fight. And step by step, you will make it to the next level.
We'll be back with more on Fighters Fury right after this.
It's Fighters Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
Welcome back, everybody. Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Very excited to have XFN in studio with us. We have the president and CEO, Daniel K, with us, and we have their bantamweight champion and superstar, man. You carry yourself like a superstar for this thing, man. Ryan Kuss is joining us. The Third Street Savage is in studio with us. So you guys were just showing me this during the break. So Ryan has on a what looks like a ski cap, but if you pull it down, it turns into a ski mask. And I gotta put this up on for social media so people can see this. But Ryan, explain the ski mask, man. What do we got going on here? Because that is a cool look.
Basically, every time I come into the show, I basically do a strong arm robbery. I come and rob all the gold, take all the gold belts. About to get the 145 pound belt. I already got two 135s. I'm just trying to get all the gold.
It's absolutely sick, man. It's a funny thing, like finding those things that click with the crowd. Because you, Dan, you were showing me during this. So you got like everybody. This is a thing when people come to see you, Ryan. People wear the ski masks and in support. Like they know that's your thing.
Yeah, you'll know all my fans. They're all ski masked up, hoodied up, Third Street Savage apparel to the floor. That's how you know the real Third Street Savage fans.
How did you come up with this, man? Because like the famous mask back in the day, almost the guy I remember in Fight Game who had the most famous mask was Bernard Hopkins. Always came with the executioner mask. It was such a cool thing. But like the mask has become, I don't know what it is, but when a fighter wears a mask, whether Danny Garcia, whether it be Deontay Wilder, the mask is it take you to a different place? Is it something like that, or is it just something that's for fun for the crowd?
I don't know. I just love the look of it. I even got a ski mask tattooed on my leg.
Let me see that. Oh, I like that, man. Yeah. That's a good look.
I don't know. I just feel like it's some South Florida stuff. It don't snow out here, but we always masked up. No face, no case.
Oh, man. That ski mask. I remember back in the day, like if I was ever up north, but the ski mask was such a tough look when you actually needed it for snow. I don't understand who came up with it. Then they went to like the kind of just half over. That seemed like a little bit more practical.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's a great look. So how many of those things? So you're telling me like people go, you got this going merch wise. Like that's a very forward thinking thing, man, to make sure that not only is your crowd there to support you buying tickets, but they're merched up. They got all of that stuff. They got all that stuff in knowing that they're supporting you.
Yeah. Cause right now in amateur MMA, it's not too much money to be made. So I got to think entrepreneurial.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend, shout out Jermaine, he's like my designer. I give him ideas and he just puts it on paper and we make it happen. So I'm selling shirts at 25, hoodies at 35, and ski masks at 15. So I need to make my little bit of money on top of.
Where can they get those, man? Let them know.
Yeah, they can hit me up on Instagram at Third Street Savage, spelled out, THRD Street Savage. Hit me up on Instagram. Follow me. I got you.
Yeah, we'll tag them out this when we put out the podcast as well so you guys can go find Ryan Kuss. So what do you think of this, Dan? The whole ski mask look for everybody out there in the crowd. That's got to be pretty cool seeing that at your shows.
You know, it works, man. It works. You love it. Especially in the amateurs, you don't really see that too much where these fighters have such a personality that it rubs off on the crowd. But,
right.
You know, when you're looking at the crowd or when you're walking around and you see 150, 200 people wearing these ski masks, wearing these T-shirts, something's working, you know, and it's great for Ryan. I mean, it's really smart of him to come up with this. And he's right. In the amateurs, they don't get paid. These guys fight, do not get paid. We're not legally allowed to pay them. If I pay them, I lose my license.
Really?
Yeah, that's the law. That's the way it works. As soon as they get paid, they're considered a professional. And in the state of Florida, you're legally required to have 5 amateur fights before you can even apply for a pro license.
Really?
So, you know, it's important for any of you amateur fighters that are listening in right now, you got to find ways to support yourselves. I know finding sponsors is one thing, but you got to market yourself too. And if you can come up with a personality like Ryan did, Third Street Savage, it's going to go a long way for you.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, man. It's a tough balance because you have so much focus that you got to go into your craft and being good at fighting and making sure that you have all that covered because you're at the early shakes of your career and you're working your ass off in the gym. But like you do, is it tough balancing both of that stuff or is this the fun part of the job?
I've noticed fighting at a high level, it starts to become more business as well as fighting. Because I noticed when I first started training, it was training. Now my video man will hit me up. Yo, we got to do a video. My designer, yo, we got to design the shirts. You get me? It's a lot more starts going into it. Now, you get me? Sunday morning, we're on a radio show.
Yep.
I'm still going to train after this, but, you know, it becomes more than just training. Now it becomes a job, and, like, it's a lot, but it's real fun. It makes it different. It's a different obstacle every day.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, man, for sure. Let me get some of your thoughts on a little bit from last night. We had a UFC 241, the heavyweight championship of the world. When you're watching that, Ryan, do you ever do you do any visualizing? Like, do you think about the big shows and picturing yourself there with, like, the monster pay-per-views and all that stuff? Like, do you ever let yourself get that far, or are you just thinking about, let's just get to the pro debut?
Oh, no. I see myself making that UFC walk every day, every day. Every time I see that, I just picture me fighting in the cage. 135-pound strap coming from Henry Triple C. Get ready, boy. Thirsty Savage coming.
I like it, man. That's good. It's nice that you always have that end game in mind. Like, you got to keep that. I imagine, like, it seems so big, but it can be. It really is important to be able to see yourself at that level.
Yeah. Did you see Paulo Costa's walkout?
Yeah.
What song did he come out to? I forgot. It was like an old school, like Aerosmith or something.
He went to Dream On.
Dream On. Oh,
Dream On.
Yo, that.
You right like that?
That.
You walking out to that
will
one
be the
next
song?
Fight?
No. But that'll be the song that I come out to when I fight for the title. That's
really
like, yeah.
You like that song?
I don't know. I think something my dad played it when I was a kid or something. But that
it's eerie.
Gives me that feeling.
It's an eerie song, and then it really hits.
Yeah.
Once it gets to that point where you're probably at the cage.
Yeah.
It really hits. But man, that was a monster fight. That was a crazy scrap.
That has to be fight of 2019.
I think so, man. Like, it's either that or I guess Stylebender versus Kelvin. But that, yeah. I mean. It felt like that fight was going to end on any shot. It was bananas.
And Yoel's taunting had me cracking up.
Yeah, he's
time.
Just like, he's giving him the chameleon, like, after every shot. Like, it was, I mean, it was wild. We were talking about this before segment when you weren't here. Who did you think? Did you think Yoel should have gotten the nod, or did you think Costa got it?
I think Costa got it. Yoel thought he probably secured the second round by that takedown at the end, but I don't think that was enough.
It was too late.
Yeah, it was too late.
Yeah, the one thing about the takedowns, I'm like, look, takedowns are great, and I know they're an important part of the sport. I'm not thinking anything about takedowns in a fight like that.
Yeah.
It's like when with all the things that they're throwing at each other, one little swift takedown at the end of a fight, it can't swing it for me. But the only thing I thought Yoel was really doing that was effective, it just felt like he was peppering Costa in the face so much, and that damage was really piling up. So I don't know where that swings in the second round to where, because that's where it all seemed like. It felt like Costa got round one. Round three was for sure Yoel. It's kind of like, where do you divide at round two? And it's so razor thin, you kind of wish, like, man, I wish somebody got a 10-8 so it could be a draw almost, because it was that good of a fight. It was bananas.
Yeah, they might have to run that one back.
I know. It's pretty wild. I wonder if they even want to run something like that back. It feels like they leave a little bit of themselves in that cage.
Lost a couple of years of their life, but
it was a wild one. What did you guys make of the heavyweight championship? DC looked like he had that one really in cruise control. Like, everybody was talking about was the first one a fluke shot and all that. Dump Stipe right on his back after peppering him a bunch in the first round. But man, when Stipe started putting in that body work in the fourth round, I was like, whoa, he's gonna wilt him away here. It's crazy, because I don't know, what DC just couldn't come with any answer for that shot, and it was the beginning of the end for him.
Listen, I'm going into the Fire Academy myself, so I obviously had to root for, you know, the firefighter in this fight. Never count out Stipe Miocic.
Yeah.
He's a beast. He was getting demolished those first three rounds, and it really looked like it was going to continue that way. You really thought that Cormier was going to cruise through rounds four and five and secure the win. But Stipe fought smart. He started attacking the body, and he saw that it was dropping Cormier's hands. And, you know, you keep attacking the body, they're going to drop their hands. That body's soft. You know, it doesn't take a lot of power to hit that liver, and it only takes one shot to really freeze up your body like that, and that's what it took. That's what it was.
That was a perfect adjustment that he made in that round. Because DC got a pretty big target right there.
He does.
And he wasn't touching it the whole fight until once he started touching, he's like, damn, that thing was easy to touch. Boom. He wasn't even setting it up at one point, just throwing it, throwing it.
I wonder if, like, because a lot of people are looking at this with DC, and they're wondering, like, well, why didn't he wrestle more? But, I mean, like, at one point, Stipe got a takedown. I'm sure he's I'm sure the bombs that these guys were exchanging with each other, I'm sure he is thinking, like, as good a wrestler as he is, to go and try and go take down Stipe, which is not an easy task. It's probably just a question of gas tank at that point. Like, he can't go risk going and getting a takedown, and he's got absolutely nothing left. I guess that would be the philosophy in watching it, but that's obviously the big question everybody has with this is, well, why didn't DC do that more to Stipe, try it more?
I know that DC looked comfortable and confident. He was landing a lot of shots, and, you know, being the shorter guy with the shorter reach, you know, and the fact that he was landing as much as he was, it boosted his confidence. But I wonder how much of that had to do with him wanting to prove everybody wrong that the first fight wasn't a fluke, that he could get that knockout again. And, you know, listen, he's earned it in his career. He's fought the biggest and the best fighters in the world. And what is it? The only loss that he had before this was to John Jones, wasn't it? So, I mean, you know, he doesn't have to hold back for anything. If he wants to go out there and try to knock somebody out, he can. If he wanted to secure the win, he probably should have gone for more takedowns. He definitely was more dominant on the ground, even though Stipe got, I don't know if it was a takedown that Stipe got, but they had a scramble on the ground and Stipe ended up on top. For a brief moment, Cormier easily stood up out of that and went back to striking. but yeah, so I wonder if it was Cormier wanting to prove that it wasn't a fluke the first time, that he could knock him out again.
Well, there was like, Ryan, well, I wanted to get, like, because he was doing this tactic, and I don't see it very much in the cage, but it was a weird, he had like a weird disrespect for anything that Stipe was throwing at his head, and he was like doing this thing where like he was kind of like reaching out and then hitting him like with a quick shot, right? Like what the hell was he doing there? Because it was very interesting, because he's got a lot of risk that happens anyway because of the size difference. So he's got to be wary of that. But man, it was with it. He didn't care about anything. It seemed like Stipe was throwing out of his head.
I think that had to do a lot about his confidence he was getting, just touching him from close range, and he can't fight him from far range. So he was just like, fuck it, let me just go in. Let me just go in on him.
You're good, man. We got a magic button for that. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Let me just go in on him. So he just started going in. Nice head movement, touching him. But I guess his gas tank ran out at that point.
Yeah, it was crazy, because it felt like eight shots right to the body he was going with Stipe. It was wild. I don't know what's next for either one of these guys. Quite frankly, like hearing, I don't know if you guys noticed this, hearing Stipe talk to Joe, I couldn't understand a damn word he was saying. I was like, man, like, I'm like, should, like, does he need a break, or is he just, because he's taking a lot of big shots. You think about the Francis fight, this fight, he's taking on the best of the best every which way, and will always seemingly take a little bit of punishment to dish out his. That's kind of been his style. But I couldn't understand damn what he was saying. It was wild.
I don't know. It was too loud at the L House. I couldn't hear it anyways. But he took the bulk of the beatings in that fight. Like I said, up until the last 30 seconds when he started targeting the body, he was losing. He was losing the fight. But yeah, hats off to him.
It was a great night of fights. It really was. So let's get back into XFN 25 coming up September 14th. What do we got here, Daniel? What do you want to let the people know about? Let's get them hyped up for this one. Local mixed martial arts. As Daniel said, man, it really can't be said enough how good the talent is down here. Between all the gyms, between all the guys that do this, the culture of the sport, it really, I don't know what it's been, especially it feels like over like the last 5 years as far as fan turnout and passion for it. I don't know if you were at the last UFC event, but this was a market that was blacklisted about 6 years ago for a card they had at the BB&T Center. This last one that they had in April, I thought it was such a good atmosphere. And you really can see it turning around at shows like yours, at shows like Titan and things like that, where people just come out in droves to watch fighting, you know? And I know that, Ryan, you were saying it's part of the culture. I don't know what it is, but it feels like it's gone to another level.
It definitely has. I've noticed that, too, and we can see it in our numbers. Our attendance has increased so much over the years, and it definitely is higher today than it ever has been in the past. And, You know, it might be with the continued growing popularity of the sport. You know, UFC now being on ESPN, maybe it is turning more fans. I don't really know what it is. What I attribute it to is, at least for our end, you know, is marketing and then the talented fighters that we have. You know, we have some of the biggest camps in the world represented at XFN, you know, American Top Team. We get fighters from, you know, former fighters from the Black Zillions. That team kind of broke up, and now they're spread apart at gyms like Combat Club or DS Sportsplex, you know, which is ran by, you know, Jay-Z Cavalcante. He always has a good list of fighters there. But, you know, these young fighters are really learning that it's more, like Ryan said, it's more than just fighting. It really is a business. And they're marketing themselves more, you know. I guess that's what it is, but it's the talent, you know. It's the talent that they bring, and at the end of the day, that's what people are excited for. It's coming out and watching those fights. But specifically for for the upcoming XFN card, like I said, it's too many fights to really list all.
A lot of title fights.
But another really interesting fight that I know has the fans going crazy is our co-main event is a women's flyweight championship bout. It's actually a rematch from a fight that happened earlier this year between Hannah Jackson and Ann Ribeiro. Ann Ribeiro doesn't like to be known as Bigfoot Silva's daughter, but she is Antonio Bigfoot Silva's daughter. You know, she's her own character. She's her own person. She's her own fighter, and you got to respect that. So when you see her, don't say, hey, you're Bigfoot Silva's daughter. Say, hey, you're Ann Ribeiro. And when you see her fight, you'll see a lot of similarities. That girl, she just walks right up to your face, and she throws down just like the big man. She lost that split decision to Hannah Jackson in March earlier this year. There was a lot of controversy behind it.
So it's warranted that they do a rematch.
Definitely, 100%. I mean, it was a razor-close decision. For anybody who wants to check it out, that fight is on our YouTube channel, Extreme Fighting Nation, without the E at the front, XFN, Extreme Fighting Nation. You can look up Hannah Jackson versus Ann Ribeiro. Check out the first fight, and you can decide for yourself. Leave it in the comments. Cool. But these ladies are going to run it back, and it's all fireworks.
Ryan, anything you want to say to the people before we get out of here? Coming to see you fight in about just under 4 weeks' time, September 14th. What do you want to let them know?
September 14th, pull up, main event. It's going to be fireworks. Let's go.
How do people get tickets, Daniel?
You can get tickets by going to our website. It's xfnfights.com, or you can look them up on Eventbrite. Look up XFN and get your tickets quick because they do sell out. We sell out a lot of shows, so check it out.
Guys, it was great having you, and thank you for spending the hour with us. We really appreciate it. Thanks for talking fights from last night with us, and looking forward to September 14th. Should be a good one. Everybody have a great rest of your Sunday, and we'll talk to you next week.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.